I mean, I shall let you in on a little secret.
Another little secret. It's little secret time. I love it. Tell me.
You're listening to the Luxury Mind podcast with Paul Russell and Helen Villers, exploring human behaviour, psychology and luxury.
Hello and welcome to the Luxury Mind. My name is Paul Russell. I'm a consumer behavior psychologist and I'm here with my co-host, Helen Villers, who is a psychotherapist specializing in narcissistic behavior. Helen.
Hello.
Valentine's Day is coming up.
Oh, God, Paul. If there was ever a day that makes me feel so single and so unloved, it was Valentine's Day.
Are you romantic?
I am quite romantic. If I'm in a relationship, I'm quite romantic. So I do, from Valentine's Day, I do things for my kids. Like I leave them little post-it notes on the table saying all the things that I love about them and stuff. And I get them a card and chocolate and stuff. But I think if I'm with a partner, yes. But this is really interesting, is do I expect them to do more for me if it's a man? Than I would do for them.
Yes. I mean, there's no long answer to that. The answer is yes.
But that's surely unequal and not fair. Surely I should do the same for my partner or similar than they do for me.
Yes, I mean, I want presents.
Okay.
If we're going to go down the road of Valentine's Day and buy into all this nonsense of, you know, Cupids and heart and love and all the rest of it, then you're going to do it properly. Why should I be the only one to buy stuff? I also want gifts.
Oh, so you would go out and buy all the stuff?
Well, I would begrudgingly, I suppose.
Begrudgingly? Why? Why begrudgingly?
Because I think it's all nonsense, to be quite honest with you. It's become so commercialized. It's classical conditioning.
I mean, it's a commercial invention, isn't it? Wasn't it invented by someone commercial?
Yeah, I mean, it was invented by Hallmark or something, probably, to sell cards.
Right. So
something like this, you know? Right. But I mean, it is. I mean, we all buy into this idea of Cupids and hearts and love affairs, and, you know, on February the 14th, everybody suddenly loses their mind, and suddenly we all become Lotharios.
Lotharios and, oh my goodness, that was the dog sneezing, sorry about that.
See, even the dog agrees.
She's even annoyed by Valentine's Day. Yeah, it is classical conditioning, isn't it? That we are taught that if you don't get this on Valentine's Day, then you're not loved. And so I query then people that say they don't buy into it in terms of they literally don't buy into it. We don't
rubbish.
Do Valentine's Day. Do they?
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't buy into it, but I want it. I don't want to be sitting on my own on Valentine's Day in a restaurant when all around me is couples.
Oh, God, it's nothing worse. Nothing worse. The idea of sitting listening to couples talk about how in love with each other they are, when you know full well they had an argument about being late before they left to come to the restaurant and somebody did something that annoyed the other person, and then, do you know, it's just illusion and delusion.
I agree. I love sitting in restaurants on Valentine's Day and
do
watching people. Yeah, of course. One of my specialist areas is behavioral prediction. So I sit there going, you're going to be broken up. You're going to break up tonight. You're going to break up tomorrow. You're in the middle of an argument. You're going to have an argument. Adore it. And whoever I'm with is sitting there going, this is so romantic.
No, okay, so me and you need to go for dinner on Valentine's Day because I want to come and do that
exactly.
with you. Yeah, no, I'm in.
Just go and predict behavior. But it's like Pavlov's dog, isn't it? You know,
yes.
When you know the story of Pavlov's dog,
of course,
right? For those people, for those listeners who don't know the story of Pavlov's dogs, Ivan Pavlov was in the 1800s, I think. Was it the 1800s? Anyway, or the 1900s, maybe. He basically did this experiment where he noticed that when he fed his dogs, they started to salivate. So every time he, at the sight of the food, so every time he fed them, he rang a bell. Mm-hmm. So the dogs started to associate the ringing of the bell with food, and they started to salivate when they heard the bell before the food came. Then he took the food away and rang the bell, and the dogs still continued to salivate. And so we call this Pavlovian conditioning or classical conditioning. Valentine's Day is Pavlovian conditioning. The moment they start advertising hearts and roses and cupids in the supermarkets and in the shops, everybody starts salivating and going, oh my God, what am I doing for Valentine's Day?
And starts going, oh my, what am I getting for Valentine's Day?
And what am I getting for Valentine's Day? Well, That's the spotlight effect, isn't it? What am I getting for Valentine's Day? What are you doing for Valentine's Day? Because we're all under this spotlight, but different spotlights. So, you know, should we say in a heteronormative environment, the man is under the spotlight to what are you going to do? How romantic are you going to be? What grand gestures are you going to have? There's huge expectations. And on the flip side of that, The partner is on the other side of it, also under a spotlight. What are you going to get? What did your boyfriend do for you? How romantic was your boyfriend? And of course, there's all this one-upmanship as well.
There really is one-upmanship, especially amongst women. It's oh, well, oh, they just got me a new handbag. I didn't really want it. But and then they bring out the, you know, the Birkin or whatever. And it's like,
exactly.
Oh, right, yeah. No, there's such a flex over, look how loved I am because of the gifts I've been bought. And look how important I am because of the gifts I've been bought. And it's, yeah, it's
the flex is on the other side as well. Look at what I got my girlfriend. Look at what I bought her. I mean, I'm not immune to it.
Which bit? The being, the buying, well, or the getting?
The both.
Yeah.
Both. I mean, I shall let you in on a little secret.
Another little secret. It's little secret time. I love it.
About the spotlight effect. I used to send myself Valentine's cards in school.
What? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Of course.
Paul.
And not, you know, there was always a competition.
But wait,
how
I need to...
Valentine's cards how old did you get?
How old were you when you started doing this?
13,
how old?
12, 13,
13
14.
Years old. And you...
Yeah.
Jesus.
I went down to the local shop, bought it. You see, the record the year before for somebody getting Valentine's cards was 9, and I was furious with this, that somebody had got 9 Valentine's cards. So I vowed that the following year I would get more. So I went out and I bought myself 11 Valentine's cards. And roses.
And roses.
But two sets of roses. One rose is the flowers and one rose is the chocolate.
Holy shit.
And sent them to myself. And of course, all the cards, some of the cards were blank, some of them just said from Secret Admirer. And of course, I was quite savvy. I would make the shopkeepers write out the cards so that people wouldn't recognize my handwriting. And so I would say, you know, can you write out the card for me so that they don't recognize my handwriting? Not knowing, of course, that they were helping me send these cards to myself. And then I would go to the post office and I would buy stamps.
You were so conniving as a child. It's quite scary, Paul.
I don't know that I like to use that word. I think that I was thinking outside the box. I was forward thinking.
Forward thinking. Conniving. Conniving is a good word, I think.
But this is the spotlight effect. So when Valentine's Day came around, of course, I had to act so surprised that I got the most cards and roses and chocolate.
And did it work?
Could they possibly be from? Of course. Of course. I mean, I won't tell you what else we had as competitions in school because you'd be horrified. But of course, I used to cheat at that as well, so I would win.
Oh, no,
I'm not
I need
about
to know.
Cheating, Helen.
Is this something you have to tell
cheating.
Me off air, or is this something you could tell me?
I probably have to tell you something that I have to tell you off camera, and then possibly we can decide whether it's something that can be told off camera.
Ooh, I can't wait. Wait for next episode, everyone.
I'll give you a clue. Think 14, 15, and 16-year-old boys and testosterone and raging hormones.
But I don't want you to know where my brain is going to.
Going to where it's supposed to go.
I don't know. I have a 15-year-old boy. And I.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. There is... I'm just wondering about...
There is...
Like, how many people you kiss and stuff, things like that.
Oh, yes, but you need proof. You can't just come and say, I snogged this person or I snogged that person. You have to bring back a trophy. And that trophy then comes back to the common room. And if the trophy is accepted, your car moves one step forward because it's a race, you see, to who gets, by the end of term, to who gets past the finish line.
Do you know, I'm starting to wonder if everything my mother told me about boys is actually true. Disgusting. You're disgusting. That's horrendous.
It's the spotlight effect and also the bandwagon effect. And Valentine's Day is the bandwagon effect as well.
The bandwagon effect's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think it applies in so many areas. But could you just try and explain it to us, like, how it works in terms of Valentine's Day? Well, yeah, tell us what it is and applying it to Valentine's Day.
So it goes back to around the 1850s. And it was an American presidential campaign for... Mm-hmm. What was his name? Zachary Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And Zachary Taylor was doing a presidential campaign. Of course, he was trying to get people's attention and all the rest of it. And there was a circus in town, and the circus owner said to him, why don't you come up on my bandwagon and people will see you more? So he did. And, he went around on this bandwagon and he became very popular and people knew about him. And as time progressed, the bandwagon became a huge part of presidential elections. But the people who, the opponents of Zachary Taylor would say, the people who were supporting them would say to the opponent, the presidential opponents, opposing candidates, whatever they're called, you should get on a bandwagon because, this is working for him. So the bandwagon became part of the presidential campaign. And then it became a derogatory term where people would say, you're just jumping on the bandwagon. Mm. And it became to mean that you were supporting something, not because you believed in it, but because it was successful. Because everyone was doing it. So now the bandwagon effect is all over the place. And if we relate it to Valentine's Day, the bandwagon effect is, people are jumping on it going, oh, yes, I'm romantic and I'm this and I'm that. And, you're not. You're not. You spend 364 days being an asshole. You don't get to be a romantic Lothario one day a year and make it okay.
Romantic Lothario.
Who do you think you are? Yeah. Don Juan.
Don Juan. Casanova. Yeah, there's this thing, exactly. Isn't there? Yeah, this thing of... We see it all the time, but around Valentine's Day, it's everyone sharing online, particularly, what they got to reinforce the value. And there is a definite bandwagon with that look at all this stuff and look what I've done for my partner and what I've got and what I want. And...
That's also virtue signaling, but it's not just that. It's, do you do the ultimate romantic gesture of proposing on Valentine's Day?
Oh, God. I always think that when people propose on, like, this is so cynical of me, but...
No, it's wonderful. Go on. I mean, it's wonderful. We're huge advocates for Valentine's Day.
I think that might be coming across.
It's because we're bitter.
Bitter singles with a lonely Valentine's Day ahead of ourselves. I think there's something, the cynical part of me is going, if you're proposing on one of those days, you've got no better ideas. So you think, I'll just do that because it gets me. And if you're doing it Valentine's or Christmas, it means that you're doing it because you can't, then you only have to buy the ring as a gift.
Oh, wow, that is cynical.
Maybe there's a reason I'm single, Paul. I don't know. Like,
I would have said that the reason you're doing it is because you want to show off and you want to be the center of attention and you want people to praise you and think you're wonderful. And because, you know, isn't it every girl's dream to be proposed to on Valentine's Day?
Absolutely not.
A restaurant that the tables are so close to one another that you're practically making the person next to you pregnant if you moved any closer.
With that very long penis. Sorry. Would it have to be, wouldn't it? But no, but do you know what?
No, but I mean, come on. It is that, though, isn't it? It's look at me, look at us.
Well,
we're fabulous.
What's also interesting in my line of work, where narcissistic personality disorder and emotional abuse and all that sort of stuff is, that actually can be a very controlling element to that, too, because it, excuse me. There can be a very controlling element of that too, because it could be that you're putting someone in a position where they can't say no. And if they did say no, it would be humiliating to the person asking, not only to, you know, it'd also be humiliating to the person being asked, but there's such a social pressure. If someone proposes to you in front of other people, that you say yes, that you'd say yes and then say no later. But that in itself is impossible, because then you have to go back and tell everyone that you don't want to get engaged. So I actually, the idea, if anyone was to propose to me in public in front of other people, they would get an immediate no just on principle, because you don't know me. If you're doing that, you don't know me. And also you're also putting me in a position where I can't say no. I object so strongly.
Brutal.
Is it?
I mean, I would say yes, and then I would, after everybody was gone, I would say, listen, this ring is too small.
Maybe I should do that instead. That'll be my master plan.
I don't know how you chose this particular diamond, but did you use a magnifying glass to see it?
Okay, so what's the thing about diamonds then on Valentine's Day and roses and all that stuff?
The thing about diamonds is De Beers, isn't it, from the 1950s. Diamonds are forever. Diamonds, you know, everybody loves it. It comes from an advertising campaign where De Beers weren't selling enough diamonds. And diamonds were not popular. You didn't get a diamond engagement ring when you were engaged. The rings were, if they had a stone in them, the stones were much plainer, but invariably they were just a plain gold band, because your engagement ring also became your wedding ring. And the whole diamonds are forever thing, they sat in a room going, well, how do we make people buy more diamonds? What do we link diamonds to that has longevity and scalability? And the idea was, we'll link it to love, because love doesn't go away. And of course, there's always a new breed of people falling in love and getting married. And the diamonds are forever, this idea that they're forever and that they're meant to last, is to eliminate the secondary market. You don't see secondhand engagement rings.
You can see mine on diamonds. eBay, if you like. Sorry.
Yes, but that's just from bitter, twisted, and cynical people who sell it to make a point. But most people don't.
Or because the engagement ended.
You're supposed to give it back. But...
Well, I'll let you in a little secret, sorry. But I'll let you in on a little... I'll try and get my words out. I actually bought my own engagement ring. I know, your face is horrified. Yeah, yeah, how sad is that? But I wanted a nice... Well, because I wanted a nice one and he couldn't afford it.
So make him save up.
Well, Paul, should we just maybe... Well, hang on. I don't know how much I want to disclose, but that wouldn't have happened because, you know, alcoholics don't tend to save up very much money, do they? So,
no, but they're much easier to steal from.
If they had anything in the first place. Like, yeah. Anyway, that's enough of that.
So this whole idea of the the diamond engagement ring, if there's a financial crisis, tends to be the last thing that people will let go of, because they've been conditioned to believe that diamonds are forever and that all of my love is encapsulated in this stone, this piece of carbon. And so De Beers got celebrities to wear diamond rings, and then they wanted to broaden the market, so diamond rings were for everyone, and they taught you how much you should pay to get for an engagement ring, which was three times the monthly salary. Then, of course, every advertisement had an education point on it. So they would advertise the diamond ring, and then underneath it, there would be a bit of education. How much you should spend on engagement ring, how to get the best diamond, cut clarity color, all of this stuff. And of course, it took off. And now, if you ask somebody what kind of ring they want as an engagement ring, invariably 95% of the world will say a diamond engagement ring.
They don't know why. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think I see now that there's a shift from away from diamonds now. I think people are starting because of the whole blood diamonds thing and everything else. And I think...
Oh, come on, Helen. Nobody cares if it's a blood diamond.
I think people like to think that
they
care.
The grand majority of people, if you are handed a stonking great diamond ring, you're going to go, this is beautiful. Now, if the person says to you, actually, it's a blood diamond, you're going to go, oh, that's awful. That's terrible. But it's so nice. The grand majority of people. It is pretty.
I tell you what.
The grand majority of people will virtue signal in public that they're against this and they hate it and all the rest of it. And then they will do nothing in private. It's exactly like environmental issues. It's exactly like sustainability. It's a bandwagon effect.
There you go. It is a bandwagon effect. Until you're put in the position to choose, make the choice not to accept the very valuable thing. And humans are greedy. And humans want to look with that spotlight effect. Look at me. I'm here with my beautiful big shiny ring.
There's no label on that ring that says this is a blood diamond.
So they could lie as well and pretend.
Of course they could. You know, look at Naomi Campbell. She was dripping in blood diamonds. Did she care? No.
No. And there was something else I was going to say about blood diamonds. It's a bit like my grandmother's mink coats. They were acceptable because they were passed down. But if you, if I was to buy one new, it's not acceptable. Right?
Helen, if I turned up at your door with a mink coat, you would take it.
No, I don't think I would, to be honest, but I struggle with that one, and I struggle with all of this, because then
would,
there's my conditioning.
You would put it on going, oh my God, it's so soft, it's so beautiful, it's so wonderful.
They are so soft.
And what would happen is, you would go outside with it, and people go, I love your coat, and you would be at pains to tell them it was fake.
I'm wondering, I don't know. Would I?
Human behavior says that we say one thing in public and do something different in private.
I think that's certainly true about me, without a doubt. But there are things that are across the threshold. And would I wear a mink coat?
I mean, I wouldn't buy a mink coat, nor would I condone anybody buying it. But I do know that if push came to shove, the grand majority of people, if handed a £25,000 fur coat, would not say no on principle. That's just human nature. They would say no on principle to the idea of it, to the theory.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no way. I tell you what, let's test it, Paul.
No, I'm not buying you a mink
coat. Oh, God damn it. I was like, well, what about a ring?
Can you buy me a blood diamond ring?
Yeah, buy me a blood diamond. We'll see. And
let's see how I react to it. No. That is, you know, people are not as... People like to be pearl-clutching and feel virtuous in public. But when push comes to shove... It's like saying to somebody, here's £100,000, but it comes from a bank robbery. people would convince themselves that nobody was hurt because it came from a bank and banks can afford to lose it and they need it more than anybody else. I think you've unplugged yourself, Helen.
I'm sorry, I was muted. No, I think you're right, because I'm sitting here trying to convince myself why it would be okay for me to accept 100,000 from a bank robbery, because my brain immediately went, well, they've got insurance for that. And then it was like, wait, exactly. That's naughty. Let's test it out. Give me 100 grand, see if I keep it. I'll try. I'm happy to be a guinea pig.
But again, this goes back to this whole idea of Valentine's Day, doesn't it? That, you know, that there is this idea that there's a cognitive dissonance there almost. You know, we're lying to ourselves that we have bought into this holiday, that we have bought into this. Mm. We are romantic. We do love our partners. And, you know, we do love our partners, but I mean, why do you need one day a year to show that?
Yes.
Why do you need one day a year to buy red roses or flowers or a gift or whatever? Why February 14th? Why not June 22nd?
Absolutely. And do you know what's really interesting about that aspect, the buying the gift thing that you just mentioned, was it's usually one of three things plus dinner. And it's usually flowers, chocolates, diamonds. There's not very often that you see people having another type of gift for Valentine's Day. It's usually I got
or
you
gold.
Or gold. Or a piece
a
of jewelry.
Necklace, a gold chain.
Yeah.
It's a piece of jewelry.
Yeah, a piece of jewelry. Yeah. But it's the
jewelry, flowers, chocolates, dinner.
Yeah. And then a shag.
And if you're the bank.
Sorry.
Helen, don't say the quiet things out loud.
Inside thoughts, Helen. Inside thoughts.
And then, you know, if you're the best boyfriend in the world or the best husband in the world, you buy all four. Also, if you're the guiltiest husband in the world who's having an affair or who's a terrible husband, you also buy all four.
For both.
Because then you can say, well, look how wonderful I am. Look how amazing I am. Look at what I got you for Valentine's Day. And that should be enough for you for the rest of the year.
But they're doing it for
while I go and
both
sleep
partners.
With
yeah.
10 other people.
Gross.
So it's, gross. You know, there is this cognitive dissonance that we are lying to ourselves.
Absolutely. That. I once went to, for Valentine's got taken to a very nice hotel in, I want to say Devon or Cornwall. And it was a beautiful hotel and it was Valentine's Day weekend and it was ridiculous because everything was all about Valentine's Day. Like, it was so trussied up. And then there was this Valentine's Day menu. And it was hilarious because they had this artichoke mousse on
it.
It
was triple the price of the normal
everything,
menu, I'm sure.
Yeah. And the, well, I'll come back to that bit in a minute. But they had artichoke on the menu. And you know what artichoke is known as? Fartichoke. Yeah. So on Valentine's Day,
anyway, it should be illegal.
I actually quite like it. But they, on Valentine's Day, gave it was such a savage. I wonder if the chef was single because they gave all these couples this thing that was going to give them dreadful wind all evening. And it was like the best Valentine's Day sabotage ever. It was amazing. So we had all these meals and then everyone's sort of like propelling themselves along from this fartichoke mousse thing. But it was absolutely hilarious. But I tell you, you're right. The price was triple fold what it would have normally be for a weekend at that hotel. And the person that had taken me moaned about the price all the way home. I should have known then it was destined to failure.
It was destined to failure. But I mean, this whole idea of bringing you out to a hotel ties into the confirmation bias, doesn't it? That anything that says Valentine's on it is now suddenly romantic.
Yeah.
So you go to a shitty restaurant, shitty hotel, and as long as they put a candle on the table and a few rose petals, it's suddenly a romantic dinner for two.
It's
fine. You're in some sort of roadside steakhouse or something, but there are candles on the table. The menu is double the price that it would normally be.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that the waiter or the waitress has no teeth. It's still romantic.
Poor waitress, it's not her fault. Don't be mean about her teeth. Have you seen what it costs to go to the dentist in this country? Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If I brought you to that same place the following week, you'd be horrified.
I would be horrified if you would have taken me on Valentine's Day, to be honest.
Why?
Well, because it's...
They put candles on the table and they made it romantic, Helen.
Because I'm not that gullible, Paul. I know I'm fairly easily influenced.
People are. It's nothing to do with gullibility. It's to do with this confirmation bias that as long as there's a candle, some rose petals, and the idea that Valentine's is there, so it's all love and romantic, that we are buying into this this confirmation bias ideal that I am being taken out for a romantic dinner.
But there's also this thing of, if I'm being taken out for the dinner, they must really love me. And I must be really in love if I'm buying this.
So that's confirmation bias again.
Right. So if I'm spending all this money or being spent all this money on, then I am...
Then you must be special.
Must be, well, special, but also our love must be the purest. It must be the best in the world.
You and the other 300 people in a restaurant that seats 120.
And it's so hot, everyone's sweating because they're so close together.
Everyone's sweating.
Yeah.
You know, the makeup is melting and high heels are suddenly coming off underneath the table because they're just sitting fashion.
They are.
And I've had to tot, not me, but high heels and I don't go together. But, you know, you've had to totter across... a three-mile car park to get to the restaurant.
Carter bar shoes. And you can't ever totter across a car park. Like, never. So, Carter bar.
You know, it's that thing, isn't it? You know, and then, of course, you have got... I mean, but you also see stupid things. You also see somebody coming in with, you know, a 45-foot teddy bear. What possessed you to buy that? What is romantic about
a giant
teddy bear that is going to terrify most people?
But do you know what? That's so interesting because another one of the gifts you often see are little teddy bears saying, I love you. And they've got a little heart. Yeah.
And they
but those are for children.
Now, I will admit, I have been given those. And
do you still have them?
I own them. I do because they're a testament to the people who have loved me in the past.
And the people who have come and gone.
Well, the people who have been deemed not suitable, but I'll keep the teddy bear.
Why? Why? I'm genuinely interested.
Well, you can't just have one teddy bear, Helen, because it will get lonely. So
how old are you, Paul?
Two.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
Telling you. There's nothing to do with this.
It's absolutely...
But do I have them? Yes, I do. Which is really funny because I'm not at all sentimental about gifts. People will keep the boxes of stuff, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they buy, you know, if they get a present of a nice watch or a nice piece of jewellery, they'll keep the box. My box goes straight in the bin.
No, I keep boxes.
Why am I keeping clutter?
No, well, I keep the... Well, I keep boxes for... To literally store the thing in when I'm not using it. So I've got a very nice Louis Vuitton handbag that stays in the box whilst I'm not using it. Your face is... What is the face about? There's judgment. Look at the judgment on it. Jeez. What's that about?
No, you're one of them. My business partner is one of them. It drives me nuts.
But if I had the display space, if I had this, like... amazing walk-in wardrobe, they would all be on display, not in boxes, and I would get rid of the boxes. But I don't have that, so I need to keep them safe and not get squished and things.
Okay. I mean, you're judging me for keeping my teddy bears, but you keep boxes for no reason.
For a practical purpose. You keeping them because they remind you of somebody that dumped you.
Well, I can't remember who gave them. Dumped me.
I would took a long time for that to kick in, didn't it? You're quicker than that normally. Dumped me.
I'm the one who does the dumping. Thank you very much. Not all the time, but some of the time. I'd like to be the one who does the dumping all the time. Actually, to be quite honest with you, I can't remember who gave me most of them.
But then there. Why do you keep them?
I like them.
They're teddy bears.
Prince Andrew. I have 150 teddy bears on my bed.
Prince Andrew?
He's a bit of a psychopath. He has a teddy bear arrangement of about 60 teddy bears on his bed that the staff have to put back in exactly the right position or he goes nuts. Apparently.
I'm horrified. I mean, I feel like that was the little secret of this week. Are you serious? Is that a well-known thing or is that a you-known thing?
I think it's relatively well-known.
Really?
Hmm.
But you now have compared yourself to Prince Andrew.
No, I haven't. What I said was, I'm not exactly Prince Andrew with 150 teddy bears on
I got that wrong, sorry. But still.
But yeah, so, but I mean, I have an odd relationship with Valentine's Day. I want to be adored and given gifts and told how fabulous I am. But also, and I'm happy to give gifts. I mean, I'm not happy to adore you, but I'm happy to give gifts. But am I giving gifts because I like you, or am I giving gifts because it's expected of me? You see, that's the thing.
Now, there's my demand avoidance. That's where I come in. Because I would rather just be surprised on a random day with I wanted to buy you these things because I know that you would like them.
Because it's genuine. Yeah. Rather than being forced to because of some sort of social convention.
Yeah. And I much would rather... to do it in the reverse too, that I went out shopping, saw this thing, or I know you've been eyeing up this thing online, so I went out and got it for you. Big or small, you know.
Right, but then if you went out then the following week after Valentine's Day with a group of friends and they said to you, what did you get for Valentine's Day? And you said nothing, then they'd be like, well, your boyfriend is...
I mean, I've been saying that for years.
...the meanest man on the planet. Yes, but you're single. What do they expect you... If you actually turned up and said, well, for Valentine's Day, I got this, 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 and this, and they'd be like, oh, do you have a boyfriend now? And you'd be like, no, I bought it for myself. That's not the flex you think it is.
Can we change the word boyfriend to partner? But yes.
If you wish. It's entirely up to you.
I feel...
I mean, on Valentine's Day, who's going to get you the better gift, a boyfriend or a girlfriend?
I reckon a girlfriend. Do you not think? They put much more thought into buying gifts.
They may put much more thought into it, but the men will use money to buy the most expensive gift because that's what's expected. And obviously, in the male mind, the more money I spend on you, the more important you are to me.
No.
In the female mind, the more thought I put into it, the more important you are to me.
But in the male mind, the more money I spend on you, the more likely I am to get lucky as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get lucky anyway if the gift is good.
Oh, really?
That's kind of a given.
Is it?
I mean, you just said it earlier.
Did I? What did I say?
Chocolates, flowers, jewellery, dinner, shagging. That's what you said.
And a shag. I forgot. But yeah, that is. But it's true, right? So there is. But there is a male expectation. See, I don't think women do this the same way that men do. That men... expect that but women don't expect sex in return for dinner. Whereas
They don't. That is a social convention. And of course, a sense of anticipation and luck, I think.
Did you deliberately pause for that long there?
Right, so yes or no to Valentine's Day?
Well,
it's a social construct.
It's a social construct, which is actually not even a social. It's a
pitfalls.
It's a commercial construct that society has bought into to demonstrate how loved or loving they are, and it then becomes a competition between your social group over who is the most loved. Well, and with social media, everyone. So my feeling is. No, because it's not authentic.
Children.
this is a bit of a Meryl Streep thing again, right? Because it's this thing of you think you're making this decision for yourself, but you're not. You're being influenced by people in a boardroom who are looking to make the most money they possibly can from people in a month where people don't normally spend anything. And so they are, and you know, trying to recover.
With somebody like me in the background going, this is how you make people spend more money.
Right. And so...
play on their emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. So where am I, in or out to Valentine's Day?
You're in it. I know you're in.
I'm in, but in a, like, I'm resentfully in. I'm resentfully in. And it's the thing of I know I'm conditioned. Yes, begrudgingly. That's exactly it. I'm begrudgingly in. But there's this thing that people do. This is where my cynicism comes from as well. Where people will go on their partner's phones and look up something to be, to make their partner's feed full of that thing on social media so that that partner will then go and buy that gift.
Genius. Absolutely genius.
Right? Or...
love it.
I'm so cynical. I just think, this is it. I just don't think it's authentic displays of love. And I feel...
no, it's not. But that's such a good idea. I never would have thought of that.
It's women usually that go to their boyfriend's phone, search for a thing that they want, and then their boyfriend's social media feed will be full of adverts for that thing.
It's so deliciously manipulative.
It's deliciously manipulative. You're so Machiavellian sometimes. Yes.
I must keep that in mind.
Now, if anybody's going on a date with Paul, just be mindful that your phone isn't left unlocked, because he will influence
because
you.
Because
you're
going to end up buying some very expensive gift.
Oh, I've got a question then. What would be your perfect Valentine's gift? Before we end, just what would your perfect gift be?
I want to be collected by helicopter.
Fucking hell.
Brought to a private airstrip where a jet is waiting, and then flown to Milan for the theatre, and then flown, then back to the aircraft, and flown to Paris for a late night supper.
And what would you watch?
And then overnight in the Creole.
Okay.
In Paris.
And is there a gift in this, or is it just the experiences?
Oh, well, I, you know me. I never ask for anything specific. I like a surprise.
Just search for a few things on their phone, and then it will come up with a few ideas for them.
Well, now that I know that I can do that, then yes, the surprise will be fabulous.
Amazing.
Why, what's yours?
Well, nothing as lofty as a helicopter, but now I'm changing my mind a bit. I think maybe I need to raise my standards. Do you know what? Actually, a private jet somewhere to a private jet, like the south of France, a yacht, not a yacht that I would call, but like a a big one, a gin palace type thing. You know what we would call them in my family, the ones that sit on the edge of Cannes just to look pretty, just to in the marinas.
I know exactly what you mean. You could also hire a private island for me and have private dinner by the private beach. That would also be quite nice. Yeah. I'm easily pleased, Helen.
Or I'd love just a weekend on my own with no interruptions and no children or anything to look after. That would work really well for me too.
Oh, I can do that any weekend.
Yeah, well, I can't. So higher value to me than you, I guess. But yeah.
So no, I have many ideals that would make a perfect Valentine's Day. So, you know, if I do have a partner, then it's fine. They won't be short of ideas.
So if either of us meet somebody, we'll just send them this episode and then they'll know what to get us. Amazing.
There you go. How to impress them.
They'll be sitting there going, oh my God, I'm going to fail at every turn. No proposing
and
in public.
Yourself at the same time.
Yes. Yes. My engagement ring has to be massive. Yeah.
Listen, it has to be seen from space. Those are the rules. Yeah.
We need to blind people.
I need to be walking lopsided.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I need to struggle. I need to build biceps as I lift my arm because it's so heavy. It's so many carrots. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And you see, there you go. We have now bought into the illusion of Valentine's Day.
Oh,
just from
suck
this
it
very
in.
Conversation.
Suck it in. Something wrong with us, Paul.
Oh, Lord.
It's right. So almost like we're influenced by behavioural psychology, isn't it?
I know, these bloody behavioural psychologists. I know, you
dreadful.
Can't trust them at all.
You really can't.
All right.
Well,
on
see
that you next
note,
week.
You take care.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, do all of these things.
All
buy
the
us
things.
Gifts if you want.
Yeah. We'll set up a PO box. And yeah.
And a list. A gift.
And a list. Let's get an Amazon one.
Would be...
Oh, no, not an Amazon. Selfridges wish list. Wish list.
I could live with Selfridges if we're going for the more cost effective element. But yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Take care, everyone. Bye.